This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins.
Now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thanks so much for being here for Cradle My Heart Radio for this latest edition of the program. I'm Kim Cotola, and I know that as we think about our mission week in and week out of preventing abortion and helping those it hurts, sometimes we're able to speak with somebody who has had an abortion, who's healed, who's willing to share the story. And what I love about these stories is that we get to see a beautiful portrait of the aftermath of abortion. Because before we are healed, the aftermath is quite a different picture. It's quite a different experience. But when healing comes, such beauty, such joy, such glory. I think this is really important because, you know, it isn't our stories that persuade us that abortion is wrong. We know that abortion is wrong because it kills an innocent human being. It's not a preference issue. You know, if someone says to you, if you don't like abortion, you shouldn't have one, your answer should be, well, I'm against abortion not because I don't like it. I'm against abortion because it's wrong. And the same thing, you know, there are so many people now who are attempting to put forward stories of abortion where women say they weren't harmed, it was a great good in their lives, they were relieved. There was even a study that was released recently saying 95% of women had a positive response 3 years on. So our stories don't prove whether abortion is right or wrong. But what I think you'll find is missing in the stories of those who do not regret an abortion is there's no room for the glory of God, even in the decision, or certainly not in the aftermath. But in the conversation that lies before us today, I think you're going to see God's fingerprints all over our guest, Sarah May. Sarah May, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really an honor to be on with you.
Sarah May, you are such a beautiful and winsome presence, and it's easy to see how you would be a very charismatic leader for women. And I would think that because you are now a published author, you've been a conference speaker, you're a very successful blogger, that you might be tempted to kind of bury the fact that, well, yes, I am healed and redeemed of an abortion, but wow, if I Google your name, I see your website, and the very first topic I see as a subpoint under your website is my abortion story. That is bold. That is very bold. And I want to commend you for that. And I want to give you a chance to share that story with us today.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's funny you say that about being bold or how I might be tempted to bury it. It's a funny thing because I don't feel any of those things. I feel like God in his redemption and kindness and tenderness. I mean, this is part of my story. It's part of my journey. And so I don't want to bury what God has done in my life. And if it's the only story that anybody ever hears and they never read any of my other words or my books, you know, if I can impact to go from dark to light because of my story, then, I mean, that's what I'm here for. I mean, that's what God is using me on this earth for, if that's the only thing, you know. I mean, I know it isn't, but so I have no temptation to bury it. Do you want me to just sort of jump into my story and start?
Well, sure. Yeah, I mean, I want to give you the chance to share it, and I need to properly introduce you to our guests who might not have known that you, for example, are one of Christian Broadcasting Network's 6 women leaders to follow on Twitter. We probably could spend the day talking about Twitter tips on how to build your followers, Sarah May, but we probably won't go there today. But you are clearly a woman of influence, and it's not just getting followers. You have something to say, and that's why people follow. But you've also co-authored with Sally Clarkson the best-selling book Desperate, Hope for the Mom Who Needs to Breathe. You have a drive to inspire women to hold fast to Jesus and to live by faith, and you've written a new book, Longing for Paris, which is this deep expression of something that you've identified, I think, in every woman's heart. So with that context, tell us who you were before. Tell us what happened in those circumstances.
Okay, sure. So when I was 14, I went to live with my mom in Georgia. Now, I had grown up with my dad and my stepmom because my mom had some issues that I didn't know about until I moved in with her. So at 14, I moved in with her, and I found out that my mom was an alcoholic. Now, I love my mom, but she just had issues of her own, and that's how she dealt with it. But during that time that I lived with her, I really had no rules or discipline, and I could do pretty much whatever I want. And a teen girl being able to do whatever she wants and feeling lonely and broken because her mom is an alcoholic, and at the time my mom was verbally abusive, I really found a support system in having a boyfriend who also had a broken home. And so we really just bonded and connected. And through that, by the time I was 16, I became pregnant. And, of course, any 16-year-old who finds out they're pregnant is pretty scared to death. But I was resolved in my heart that I would have this baby and we would get married and this would be our life. Well, I called up my dad first and I said, "Dad, I have to tell you something. I'm pregnant." And his first response was something that I really believe only the grace of God could have given him, because my dad is not a Christian. And he said, "Well, it'll be kind of cute to have another little one running around."
Aww.
And that was just the response of his heart. It, to this day, I can't even believe he said those words. And it just calmed my spirit. And after I told him, I called up my grandmother. Now, that might sound like a funny thing, but I was really close to my grandmother. And I called her up, and this was my dad's mom. And I told her the same thing. And she said, her first words were, "I'll have it taken care of." Such a contrast.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Well, I don't even, what do you mean you'll have it taken care of? I don't want to do that. I want to have this baby." And she, you know, we hung up the phone. Now, when I went back that summer, because it was right around that time that I'd gotten pregnant that I would go back to stay with my dad in the summer, everything had changed. I think my grandmother had gotten to my dad. And so he was having a really hard time saying he wouldn't support me, and my grandmother just completely stopped talking to me. So here I am, 16, sick as all get out, throwing up morning till night, very, very weak. The guy that I was with wasn't with me because he was back in Georgia, and here I was back in Pennsylvania with my dad. So I'm lonely, I'm distraught, I'm sick, but I'm still resolved in my heart to have this baby. Even if I wasn't going to keep it, then I was resolved to adopt out. That was just my heart. But the pressure and sickness and the loneliness got to me because nobody wanted me to do that. Everybody wanted me to just have an abortion. And so finally, after 3 months of feeling just totally alone, my other grandmother came to visit me, and she sat down on my bed next to me, and she said, "Sarah, you don't understand how hard your life's going to be if you have this baby, and you're going to miss things like prom, and, you know, adopting out, you don't really want to do that." And finally, I was so done with everybody having an opinion that I said, "Fine, that's fine. I'll have an abortion." And so I had a fairly prominent family, and so they set up an abortion, not in an abortion clinic, but in a hospital, because I was real fidgety, and the doctor felt like she can't do this in a clinic. She needs to be completely put under.
Sure.
And so I went into a hospital, and they changed my name to Sandy Charles, because they didn't want anybody to know in our community that I had the abortion.
Yep.
And so I went in, and they knocked me out completely, so I wouldn't know or feel anything. And I woke up later, and I slept for 2 days afterwards. And then I woke up and I was living with my grandmother because my stepmother didn't want me in the house. She was the only person who didn't want me to have the abortion, but that's a whole other story that's not mine to tell. And so I woke up and I was with my grandmother and I came out after sleeping for 2 days and she served me toast with a smile and we never talked about my abortion ever. And that was it. And so I never had the opportunity to talk about it or to grieve it or to really think through it. My mom had checked out of the situation, so she couldn't talk about it. So it just got stuffed way down deep. And a couple years later, my grandmother died, and I'd always felt like, well, that was your punishment. Like, I never cried for her dying. It took me years to cry over her death. So I held this deep sort of resentment down somewhere in my soul. And years went on. And I really couldn't see little children without tearing up. I didn't understand that. I considered myself pro-choice. I wasn't outspoken or anything, but I wouldn't have said I was pro-life or anything. I just kind of was a quiet, pro-choice woman.
Right.
And in
me
college,
too, by the way. Me too, by the way, after mine. It's very common, right?
Mm-hmm.
Justification.
And so finally, I got to a point my junior year of college where I was so depressed. Now, I had become a Christian at the end of high school, beginning of college. And so I fell in love with Jesus. I mean, completely and utterly. I mean, I was telling everybody about him. I couldn't get enough of the scriptures. I was following him with my whole heart. But around my junior year of college, I just got really, really depressed. And at one point, I was down on my knees in my apartment and I said, Lord, I cannot go any lower. I don't know what's wrong with me. And if you don't rescue me from this pit, I don't know what I'm going to do. Well, the next day I had to find an internship. I was a human studies major, a human and family studies major at Penn State. And I needed to have an internship in counseling since that's what I wanted to do. Well, it turned out a block down from my apartment was a pregnancy clinic. Now, I didn't even know what a pregnancy clinic was, but I knew that they counseled people. So I walked down there, and I said, hi, can I get an application? I need to get an internship for my major. And they said, okay, here you go. So I get the application, and there's a question that says, what do you know about abortion? And I thought, well, I don't know anything. I mean, I was so in denial. So I went and got a book on abortion called, Forbidden Grief, The Secret Pain of Abortion. It was something like that. I think it's out of print now, but it was a phenomenal book.
Teresa and Burke, I think you can still get it on Amazon.
Can you? Okay.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful book. The research is probably out of date, but it's still an excellent book. And so I went to this little coffee shop with my notebook to take notes on everything I learned about abortion. And as I'm reading, the floodgates of my heart open, because I realized she was writing about me. She was talking about so many of the symptoms of women who have abortions and the depression and the acting out and all sorts of things and research about it. And it just broke me. And I knew it was the Lord wanting to heal me. And so I finally accepted and sort of got out of the stage of denial. And I walked back to the clinic and I said, I don't think I'm here for an internship. I think I'm here to get counseling. And I had a wonderful, gentle, kind woman named Ann Gale, and she took me through a Bible study called Forgiven and Set Free. And, I mean, I went through all the stages of grief, right, like denial and anger. And at one point I threw the book across the room because I couldn't handle dealing with it. But eventually, after a few weeks, we worked our way through it, and there was such beautiful healing through going through that study. And the second to last piece of the healing for me was I really, really wanted to know the sex of my baby. And I prayed and I asked the Lord, God, somehow, please, will you tell me? Because I don't know. And that night I had a dream. And it was such a real, vivid, beautiful dream. And in the dream, there was this beautiful little boy, and he was probably 7 or 8, and he had blonde hair and blue eyes. And he just kept looking at me, and I kept saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And he said, it's okay. I'm going to see you again one day. And his name was David. And I knew that that was my son. And so that was a beautiful piece of the healing for me. And then the final sort of thing that the Lord asked me to do was to share my story online. Now, that didn't happen for several years later, obviously. But I don't even think I'd had my third child yet. I can't remember. And I had a blog, and I really felt so strongly that the Lord was asking me to share my story in public. And I was online, and I had spoken in front of pro-life groups before, but I had never put my story out publicly like that. And I was scared to death. And my husband said, if the Lord is asking you to do it, you need to do it. And so I cried the whole time through writing it online and press publish. And I mean, I was shaking and scared because I knew that my family might be angry with me. You know, I didn't know what the repercussions would be. I just knew it was what the Lord asked me to do, and I had to obey. And do you know that thousands and thousands of women have read that story? And I had hundreds and hundreds of comments from women saying they've never told anybody, and thank you for sharing, and maybe they could find healing too. And it was just the Lord using one woman's story, one woman's journey from darkness to light, to bring light to thousands of other women. I mean, the story has been shared almost 100,000 times on Facebook alone. And so I'm just in that obedience, the Lord, it was like the final piece of healing for me to be able to allow God to use me in my story to bring light and
hope
to thousands of other women.
We're speaking with Sarah May, and you can access that story at her website, SarahMay.com, Sarah with an H. And we've got it linked at CradleMyHeart.org, and it's such a dear post because you see a picture of the 16-year-old Sarah, braces and all. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, Sarah, as you confirm the truth that we know in our hearts, that God gave you this beautiful dream of a child in heaven. I mean, this is what I want everyone who listens to focus on. That has to be the end of the story for us to be able to claim any glory in it. And it has to be the work of God in our hearts to reveal truth to us and for us to see His hand of protection over the eternal spirits of our children despite whatever we did because of the pressures that were put upon us at the time. And I don't think that you would, I'm just saying, you know, that's not a justification. It's not an excuse.
Right.
Healing looks very different, but what a powerful story. And Sarah May, so the after for you. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, your blog has grown, your conference ministry has grown, now you have this book, Longing for Paris, and I want to give you a chance to discuss that, but I also want to give you a chance just to encourage women. We've got about, a little less than 10 minutes left, that, you know, maybe the dream of your heart is to write, maybe the dream of your heart is to travel, maybe the dream of your heart is something huge that you can only see, but you can't really feel it or taste it or believe it even right now. Because of something that happened in your past. Maybe it wasn't an abortion like me or like Sarah. But what do you say to that woman who's longing and can see it but just feels like there's an insurmountable obstacle in her path?
Yeah, I really think that the world is desperate for healthy people. And I think until we can get healthy and deal with our issues, and by deal I mean let the Lord dig in and deal with them and heal us, that we're going to have a really hard time finding freedom and finding delight in our life. We'll have pockets of it, but there won't be a full freedom. And I want to encourage women out there. I just want to, can I read a scripture that has...
Please.
Okay. This is my life verse, and it's what the Lord has done for me, and I believe it's what the Lord wants to do for all of us. Not just, you know, so that we can be healed, so that we can be free, and so that we can be a light to others and glorify God and enjoy our lives, not stay locked up in a dark place. So it's Psalm 41-3, and it says this, I waited patiently for the Lord. He turned to me and heard my cry. Now that first part, that was when I felt like I was in my apartment and I was down on my knees and I was crying out to the Lord. And this scripture says, as I was crying out to you, that He heard me. Okay. The next part says, He lifted me out of the slimy pit, out of the mud and the mire, and He set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. the Lord can lift you out of any pit that you're in, any pit that you've been in, and he will set you on a firm rock, and he is the rock that you will be set on. And the third part of this scripture is, he put a new song in my mouth, a hymn of praise to our God, and many will see and fear the Lord and put their trust in him. Whatever you're going through, when you cry out the Lord, he will hear you. He wants to lift you out of whatever it is, set you on the firm foundation that is himself alone. And then what he's going to do is he's going to let whatever your story is turn into light so that other people would see him and put their faith in him. And so your story is not just for you, but the first step is your own healing. And mm-hmm. once you have that, you will learn how to delight, and the longings of your heart will become so just so beautiful. You'll be able to see, you'll have so much more clarity, and I just really think you'll learn how to delight in your children, in other children, in the people around you, in the world around you, and you'll be able to delight in God and not feel guilty all the time, but enjoy him and enjoy the beautiful things around you.
Sarah May is listed as one of Christian Broadcast Network's 6 influential women, or 6, let's get it right. This is a great honor. 6 women leaders to follow on Twitter. Clearly, you're a woman of influence, Sarah May. And what I want people to see is that, you know, you and I, as you're listening to this, you may say, well, I'll never have a blog like Sarah May. I'll never be a conference speaker. But I want you to see the position of influence you occupy at your kitchen table. And I want to draw a box around this so you will remember it as Sarah May talks about the influence of her grandmothers in her young life at age 16. That these women, you know, the women in my generation, Sarah, are approaching that great office of grandmother. And if we think that we are off the hook now on the issue of abortion because our years of fertility have come to an end, we are standing in the place of the pivot as to whether our granddaughters, our daughters, will actually choose life. So,
yes.
And when you talked about how this destroyed your relationship with your grandmother, it just broke my heart. So talk just for the minutes that we have remaining about exercising our influence wherever we're positioned as women.
That's so good. You know, your first words when somebody tells you they're pregnant are so important. If you ever have a young woman come to you, or your granddaughter or child come to you and say, I'm pregnant, first of all, know they're scared out of their mind. Your first words mean so much. Let your first words be a hug, and then saying, I love you. We'll get through this together. It's okay. You are not alone. That has to be your first words if there is any hope for your, for the, like, the influence that you're giving. They need to know that they're not alone and that they are still loved. If somebody would have said that to me, I would not have had an abortion. I wouldn't have. And know the pregnancy resources around you. Know the clinics around you. I had never heard of one. If somebody would have taken me to one, I 100% would not have had an abortion. I just needed support and love. I needed to know I wasn't alone. And I worked at the pregnancy clinic for 2 years counseling abortion-minded women. And the two things that came away from me that I learned, one is that every time a girl would come in and say that she was pregnant and that she couldn't tell her parents because they'd kill her, I said, did they ever talk to you about sex? And every single one of them said no. So you have got to be having conversations with your children and your grandchildren. The second thing is that they had no support. They had no one who was going to love them or walk through it with them. And that's terrifying, to be young and pregnant and feel absolutely alone. And so I would say use your influence to really, really love on the scared girl.
You know, beautiful. And all I can add is, even if she doesn't come to you, you better rehearse it now. You better know what
rehearse
your answer
now,
would be.
Yeah.
You better settle the matter in your heart.
That's good.
If the young woman that I love with every fiber of my being were to come to me and say, I'm in trouble, I better be ready to do the right thing. Well, Sarah May, I've got to consider this part one of a two-part conversation because we are just about out of time for this episode of Cradle My Heart Radio, and we've yet to really explore your work in Longing for Paris. But give us your elevator speech about that book for those who are curious right away, so we can get this before the broadcast ends.
Yeah. Okay. So if you are ever struggling with the tension between your longings and your reality, this book is for you. It starts out with a lot of questions. Lord, what do you say about dreams? Are dreams biblical? As a woman who's a wife and a homemaker and a mom, you know, what do I do with these longings in my soul? I can't travel the world to figure myself out, but I got to do something because there's something on my heart heavy. What do I do? And if you ever experience that, or you feel sort of stuck in life and you don't know what to do with your dreams or what God thinks about them, and you really also want to figure out how to bring your longings into your everyday life so you can truly, truly enjoy your life right where you are, then I encourage you to pick up Longing for Paris. And you can read more about it at longingforparis.com or, like Kim said, at sarahmay.com.
And we've got it linked at cradlemyheart.org.
Thank you
so much for pouring out your heart for us today. And I hope many, many will benefit from what you've shared of your story. Sarah May, thanks for being part of it.
Thank you.
Please stay with us now as Faith Radio continues. Tonight's program taking a look at some of the top news stories of the day.
A safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
What a pleasure. I hope you got a chance to listen to the program from the top and hear Sarah May's beautiful story this evening. She's just such an encouragement, isn't she? And if you did get a chance to hear it, I think that's great. And I hope that it blessed you as much as it blessed me, having that conversation and then hearing it replayed tonight. Call us. What did you think? 1-800-811-3003. Is Sarah's story anything like yours? Does the role of grandparents in an abortion decision resonate with you? I know sometimes, as Sarah May put it, it's someone else's story to tell. But if there is a part that you can share with us that you think would bless and benefit others, we'd love to hear from you tonight. That's why we go live for this portion of Cradle My Heart Radio on this 23rd of August, 2015. I'm Kim Cotola, and it's just a joy to have you with us tonight. 800-811-3003 is our number, 1-800-811-3003. It was another week for the undercover videos from the Center for Medical Progress. The seventh video was extremely difficult for me to watch. If you didn't see it, or if you haven't been on social media or following the video's release on YouTube, you may not know anything really about this story because the mainstream media has all but ignored it. Although yesterday there were protests at Planned Parenthood locations in about 350 locations worldwide, and the Washington Post did write about this. They covered the protests that took place yesterday. Their story says that thousands of anti-abortion activists descended upon Planned Parenthood clinics on Saturday, yesterday, to participate in a nationwide protest aimed at cutting off federal funding for the controversial healthcare organization. The demonstrations unfolded at the Washington Post numbers 320 clinics around the nation, according to organizers. Some gatherings drawing a few dozen protesters, others drawing hundreds and perhaps thousands more. And the protest kicks off at 9 a.m., went for a couple of hours. There were speakers, prayer groups, and chants, and signs distributed by organizers that said Planned Parenthood sells baby parts. This is Peter Hawley reporting in the Washington Post. And then the Washington Post goes to the Twitter feed of many of the organizers and many of the speakers, and you see that the Gospel Coalition has a posting about John Piper with prayer at the Planned Parenthood protest in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm acquainted with some of the people that were involved in organizing that one, and they numbered the crowd at about 4,500. Washington Post has Jill Stanek's tweet of a crowd of about 1,600 people in Aurora, Illinois. So the protest, the Washington Post goes on to report, came after an anti-abortion group secretly filmed a series of videos that show Planned Parenthood staffers discussing the extraction of fetal tissue from aborted fetuses before it's sent to research facilities. Abortion opponents claim the video captures an illegal operation in which organs are harvested for money, but Planned Parenthood officials have claimed the videos were edited to bolster critics' false claims, according to the Associated Press. This is just incredibly lazy reporting at this point by the Washington Post, and I have to say this because I took the time to watch the seventh video. It was only 10 minutes long. And on YouTube, you can go and find it. Look for the Center for Medical Progress YouTube channel and go and watch the thing for yourself if you can stomach it. We have Holly O'Donnell, who was a tissue procurement specialist for STEM Express, and she's giving her on-camera testimony of what happened on the day when she said the fetus that was the longest gestational age she had yet seen was brought into the laboratory. And the person who brought the fetus in, it was 19 weeks gestation, clearly a child. The video cut to a 19-week-old stillborn baby, and it was clear that that was what you were seeing, that she didn't have a camera when she was working on that specimen that day in the lab. But she, after they showed you, for context, what a 19-week-old fetus looks like, they went back to Holly O'Donnell's story about how the other researcher told her, this will be a good specimen for us to harvest both hemispheres of the brain. She said they poked the chest and could see a heartbeat, and yet proceeded. And the way that they could access the brain tissue was to take scissors and, beginning with the lip, cut the baby's face open. It was one of the most difficult things I've ever watched. And for the Washington Post to be reporting on what people were protesting and not to make people aware of the content of that seventh video is shamefully lazy reporting. Either that or they have an agenda. It's one of two things. They're no longer doing their job. Planned Parenthood, of course, has been, you know, crying that these are misleading, highly edited, fake, a hoax. You can see all sorts of ways to have it be discredited online. Watch the video and decide for yourself who you believe is telling the truth here. But I think the Washington Post ought to actually report on what the video showed, because it's unequivocal. If a baby survives an abortion attempt, you may not kill it to harvest its parts. That is illegal. And we didn't see that in the first video. We didn't see that in some of the videos that they're reporting on and that Planned Parenthood has answered about. Planned Parenthood has not answered about this latest claim of babies born alive and killed to harvest their parts. And for, you know, I mean, I guess it's a good thing that the Washington Post even reported on the protests. But if you're sitting on the sidelines and you have no idea what these videos are about and you have no idea why all those crazy people are showing up to try to take health care away from poor women, which is what Planned Parenthood says, you know, the protest is about, you would not understand at all what this story is about. And I've got to tell you, That was a source of a great deal of frustration for me this week. I'm not preoccupied with the story, but I'm following it. And I'm eager for news, and I'm eager to hear reaction I'm eager for someone to put a microphone in the front of the faces of the people responsible for this and ask them what they have to say beyond their talking points. If there's any possibility that anything like this could possibly have ever happened even once, if there's any plausible evidence of anything that's actually happening. You know, it's a separate discussion to talk about how the information was gathered and whether or not editing was done, etc. Let's just say, is it possible that this has happened? And they've yet to say it isn't. This, to me, it's such a frustrating moment that our media is refusing to do its job. 800-811-3003. If you are equally dismayed, I would love to give you a chance to sound off here and share your take on the story, what you have been reading, what you have been able to see about it. You know, there has been some reporting on the reporting. In the case of the Kermit Gosnell trial last year, the reporting on the reporting became a story after Kirsten Powers took to the pages, the editorial pages of USA Today and called the media out for their flat-footedness. But it isn't flat-footedness. If we go to National Review, which published an article last week on the 19th, Ian Tuttle is the author, and the headline reads, "The media stays shamefully silent about the most shocking Planned Parenthood video yet." And you know, Ian is with the William Buckley Fellow is a William F. Buckley Fellow, that is, in political journalism at the National Review Institute. And he says, you know, the seventh Planned Parenthood video is a bombshell. It features what I've described for you, Holly O'Donnell, with her testimony about what happened. And she described an average day on site. By the way, I didn't tell you that as I was describing it for you, but she was on site at Planned Parenthood Marmontes Alameda Clinic in San Jose, California. And she was talking about how someone said, I want, you know, one of the other researchers or employees at this Planned Parenthood facility says, I want you to see something kind of cool. It's kind of neat, her coworker says. So I'm over here, this is Holly speaking, say, and the moment I see it, I'm just flabbergasted. This is the most gestated fetus and the closest thing to a baby I've seen. And she's like, okay, I want to show you something. So she has one of her instruments and she taps the heart and it starts beating. And I'm sitting here and I'm looking at this fetus and its heart is beating and I don't know what to think. Ian Tuttle says, as my colleague David French notes, assuming that O'Donnell's account is accurate, Planned Parenthood unquestionably violated state and federal laws. And it wouldn't be the first time. He reports that in a recorded conversation excerpted in the video, Dr. Ben Van Handel, executive director of Novagenix Laboratories, which partners with Planned Parenthood to procure fetal organs, admits there are times when the procedure is done that the heart actually is still beating. Friends, this is called infanticide. We're no longer talking about abortion. 800-811-3003. Tell me what you think. Is your heart as broken over this as mine? Did you go to a protest? Would you want to report on what you saw, what you heard? Was it the first time that you've ever done anything like that? 1-800-811-3003 is our number, 800-811-3003. We've got these stories compiled for you on my Facebook page, so if you haven't gone there to like the page and see it in your news feed, you can do that and stay up to date on the reporting that I've been able to find. And there are some, you know, as you turn over the rocks, there are some kind of unsurprising things. There's a story in Crisis Magazine. Their tagline is a voice for the faithful Catholic laity. I don't read Crisis Magazine regularly, but this article was posted online. Why News Corporations Protect Planned Parenthood. It's a story by Joseph Schaefer. And he talks about the money connection. He says that conservatives and pro-life activists are bemoaning the mainstream media's lack of coverage of the ongoing video expose of Planned Parenthood's efforts to harvest the body parts of aborted fetuses for money. But he writes, an examination of the organization's surprisingly close ties to major media corporations can help explain why leading disseminators of the news in the U.S. have shown so little interest in the controversy. He says some media outlets are so brazen in their support for Planned Parenthood, they were directly listed as donors on the site of local affiliates before their website was quote-unquote down for maintenance shortly after they controversially claimed it was hacked by extremists. The local D.C. affiliate listed Gannett, the owners of USA Today, and several other major newspapers, including Detroit Free Press, Indianapolis Star, Washington Post, for decades, former owner Jeff Bezos, as financial supporters. And as recently as 2014, the San Jose Mercury News and Yahoo, which runs Yahoo News, were listed as donors to Planned Parenthood's Shasta Diablo in Northern California. Discover the Networks, a website run by the David Horowitz Freedom Center, lists the New York Times Company Foundation as a Planned Parenthood donor. And customers can buy also the emergency contraception known as Plan B from Amazon directly, which this reporter, again, his name is Joseph Schaefer, presents as evidence of clear bias. But he says that these facts explain why the Washington Post, in its coverage of the furor over the first secret Planned Parenthood video, changed its headline from organ harvesting to fetal organs used for research. The Ford Foundation has been a major supporter of abortion rights and Planned Parenthood for decades, with the data on its financial support of the organization running far too long to detail, but a random example shows $2.5 million given to Planned Parenthood in 2013, according to the Ford Foundation's tax return. Sitting on the Ford Foundation's Board of Trustees at this moment is none other than Planned Parenthood President Cecile Richards. It's an organization whose tentacles run deep into the fabric of media. And isn't it wise of them to have done that proactively? 800-811-3003. What's your reaction to all of this? Tell me what you think. I would love to hear your thoughts tonight. Our phones are open, and after a short break, we'll get you on the air. 1-800-811-3003 here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003.
Thanks for being with us tonight. We are so glad that you're here. And if you are suffering after abortion, I have to say that the outrage that people are expressing over what's being exposed about the practices of Planned Parenthood and about the fact that some of it, of course, is legal. Not everything that they're doing is legal, but some of what they're doing is legal. And, you know, the whole point of the protest was that they're receiving a half a billion dollars a year in taxpayer funding. And people want that to stop. People want that to stop. They don't want their tax dollars going to support this. There are alternatives. There are community health centers available to women, and it is not the only health care option available to poor women, although that's the big talking point. You can go and follow the money connection between those senators which have voted to defund Planned Parenthood and those who have not, and those who are receiving political contributions from Planned Parenthood and those who are not. And again, you can make your own decision about the ethics of that. But that's really what's at stake here, is whether or not we have a right of having our tax dollars being spent that way or not. If we have the right to say we don't want to be funding this. 800-811-3003 is our number. 800-811-3003. I also saw a story this week that was interesting from Dr. Ben Carson, who you know is running for the Republican presidential nomination. And he said that he was very left-wing in his politics in the past, but that what changed his mind and his heart about abortion in particular was considering the case for the abolition of slavery, because the parallels are so striking. The people who wanted the status quo said that, you know, they weren't fully human. They were three-fifths of a human being. So many of the things that are said about the unborn are also said in the same way. They're not human yet until at some point they gain some characteristic of human, which some people somehow deem to be the demarcation line of attaining value. And there's a real flaw in the thinking, and I want to share this because I heard something this week that I think is very, very helpful. As to, you know, if you don't agree that the unborn are fully human from conception forward and they have intrinsic value because they have a human nature, which does not come in degrees, we either have it or we don't. But if you're not persuaded by that, and if you don't agree with that, it's maybe because you wrongly believe that fetal development is a process of construction. And here's a comparison to help you with that, and this comes from Scott Klusendorf in The Case for Life. He said, you know, if you were to go to an automobile construction or factory and you see the chassis on the assembly line, you might not be able to say, well, that's a Ford. Maybe once they added in the engine, you could say, well, that's definitely a Ford engine. Maybe it would have to be a distinctive body on the car, or maybe it would have to be the moment when it rolls off the assembly line with the logo that denotes this is a Ford Taurus or whatever it is. But fetal development isn't like that. Fetal development happens from within. The organism, the zygote, the one-cell organism that results when sperm and egg unite, directs its own development at every stage. And though there is not a brain or a heart present, of course, in that single cell, it's not needed at that point for the development to progress as it should until the heart and the brain and the rest of the parts develop. And the analogy here is that it's like a Polaroid picture. So that if someone is out in the wild and snaps a photo of a snow leopard and sets the Polaroid down to let it develop, and someone comes along before it has and says, oh, it's just a piece of blank paper, and rips it up, the photographer would be rightly upset to say, that wasn't a piece of blank paper, that was going to develop into a photo of a very rare animal. It was going to develop, though you saw nothing at the stage at which you looked at the Polaroid. And so I think that, I don't know if that persuades you, if you're not yet persuaded, but that is actually true and a correct analogy. And if you're not persuaded, you'd have to show why it's wrong. You'd have to say what the flaw is in that reasoning, and I don't think that you'll be able to find it. 800-811-3003 is our number. And I know that these things, you know, if you haven't seen the reporting and this is all new to you, it's so shocking. And it's so difficult to talk about it and even to think about it, especially if you have an abortion and especially if you haven't yet grieved and healed from the loss that represents, that every abortion represents. So I understand that, you know, sometimes it ends up to be a monologue for me, and that's okay. I'm glad you're listening. I hope that you're taking it to heart. And I hope that if the reason that you haven't called is because your heart is broken over abortion, if nothing else, I hope that you hear this. The reason that Jesus Christ came to this earth, made himself nothing for our sake, was to pay the penalty for that sin. You are already forgiven. His death and resurrection has satisfied God's wrath, and you are justified. You need to change your thinking to see abortion for what it is and accept what he has already done on your behalf. and begin to see yourself the way that he sees you. Begin to see yourself as someone who is loved, as someone who is valued, as someone who is understood, as someone who is accepted, as someone who is loved. Yes, you are loved. The whole reason that we present this program week in and week out is that you might know Jesus' love for you. It's supernatural in the way that he sees you so differently than how you see yourself or how the world sees you or how you might imagine God would be seeing you if, like me, you tried to hide from him, that is, for all these years. I pray that you will keep listening. I pray that you will go online, go to cradlemyheart.org, follow the many links there to so many great organizations standing by to help you. Find the hotline numbers that are there for you if you're in a crisis pregnancy right now or if you are ready to accept help this evening for the problems that have followed after abortion. Please don't suffer any longer because I promise you, that is not God's will for you. His will for you is that you might be free, that you might be healed, that you would be whole. And beyond that, a beautiful, beautiful promise. His will for you is that you might know that he has received our children unto himself. And when we have the hope of heaven and the assurance of our salvation that comes from our belief and our faith in him and our professing that faith, then we have a true hope for our future forever. Thanks for listening. Please go to cradlemyheart.org to learn more. And remember, Jesus loves you, and so do we.